Blog Talk Radio.
Explosive. West Coast shit, my nigga is way to track. Girls that used to turn they back, causing me to yank they arm and pose like I would do them all.
Yes, yes, yes. What's going on, everybody? Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Octagon. I'm your host, Kalani Lua. Riding a bit solo today. Unfortunately, my co-host, Leo Showers, can't be on today, but that is okay. We're going to keep the train moving on without him. Man, it's been a long while. Obviously, we took last week off due to the holidays. Hope everyone had a very good, productive, and very filling Thanksgiving. Hope you guys had plenty of good food, lots of good laughs, and made plenty of good memories with your friends, families, or whoever you were with. And to the men and women out there serving overseas during this time of year, I know I spent a couple of the holidays overseas as well. Thank you guys for your service. And although you were not here for the holidays, you are not forgotten at all by us here back home. So with that being said, guys, it's been a lot going on in the world of MMA these last couple of weeks. Not necessarily in the sense of, oh my gosh, all this breaking news and all of these controversies coming about. Well, some, and we'll get to it in a little bit. But this coming Saturday, Detroit, that's right, 313, home of the 8 Mile and the Pistons and the Red Wings and the Tigers. Oh my. We are going to be getting UFC 218, and it is going to be a good one, folks. Yes, it is. We are going to have a featherweight title match between former champion Jose Aldo, the longest reigning featherweight champion, will be looking to recapture his place among the featherweight hierarchy as the king of the mountain. He battles the man who defeated him for the featherweight title, Max Holloway, representing the 808 from Hawaii. Holloway, Aldo, doing it again for the second time. Get into that matchup in just a moment here. We also got a heavyweight showdown, possibly number one contender implications on the line as Alistair Overeem takes on Francis Ngannou in a very, very exciting matchup of two hard-hitting studs. Somebody most likely is going to go to sleep in this particular matchup. Who will it be? Come Saturday, we'll find out. We also got Henry Cejudo, former Olympic medalist, taking on Sergio Pettis, another potential number one contenders bout. This one for the flyweight division. Cejudo already has challenged Demetrius Johnson for the title, was unsuccessful, looking to climb back into the cage with the champ to see if he could do it the second time. Pettis hasn't reached that point yet. He gets a victory over Cejudo here. He certainly will punch his ticket as being next in line, potentially with CJ Dillashaw, for the championship bout with Demetrius Johnson. A lightweight showdown between Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, two guys that coach on the latest season of The Ultimate Fighter, which culminates with The Ultimate Fighter finale this Friday here in Las Vegas. Be sure to tune in to Fox Sports 1 for that event. That's going to be a good one to see the ladies throw down to see who is The Ultimate Fighter. Sounds like a promo I'm doing for the show, but be that as it may, Alvarez, former UFC lightweight champion, looking to get himself back in title contention, a victory over Justin Gaethje, who is undefeated with one of the most exciting and really one of the most challenging yet daredevil-like fighting styles, looking to cement himself again in the UFC with a second victory. And potentially, if he does the impressive style, to say, hey, you know all those list of lightweight monsters you guys have vying for a title shot? Yeah, throw my name in that list as well. We also got a women's strawweight bout between Tisha Torres and Michelle Waterson, a.k.a. the Karate Hottie. This fight, guys, this card itself, it is stacked. This is a very, very good fight card that's going down in Detroit. Unfortunately, the main event was originally set to be Max Holloway defending against former lightweight champion Frankie Edgar. But a couple weeks back, about 3 weeks ago, Edgar suffered an injury in training camp that was going to put him out of commission, couldn't compete. Aldo was already training for a fight later on this month, or I should say December. So he was already in shape, getting ready for it, and given that he's a former champion and all that he did as champion, you know, the 5 title defenses, the longest reigning champ, the first ever UFC featherweight champion, he certainly was inclined to get a rematch, and the UFC did that. So Max Holloway, Aldo, this is going to be a very good matchup. Their first one that took place over the summer in Brazil was a very close engagement. It was a back and forth battle, and we always say matchups make fights, and these two particularly match up very well with each other. Aldo isn't necessarily a big guy as far as height wise, but he is a thick body fighter, and it's funny to say that about somebody at 145, but you guys know in the fight game, you could be 145. Aldo is somebody who does, he does cut a lot of weight to get down to 145, always makes it, but he does cut a lot of weight. So he's got bulk and he's got the strength that when he rehydrates up for fight night, he's certainly out there to able to throw some heavy blows. He's got some of the most lethal leg kicks we've ever seen in the sport. Very good with his hands. In fact, because of Conor McGregor, going into the world of boxing earlier this year against Floyd Mayweather, other fighters in mixed martial arts have started to train and look to potentially have boxing matches later on in their careers. Aldo is one of them. He's been training with head trainer Diaz, who is the former trainer of Marcus Maidana. You guys may remember Maidana challenged Floyd Mayweather to two unsuccessful yet very competitive matches against Money Mayweather. So, and he's also a trainer of other world champions as well. So I don't want to neglect those guys anyways, but Aldo's been doing some working with him with the head movement and the combinations and the footwork. So he's got a ways to go to get to boxing, but he has that to his arsenal. This is going to be very exciting to see. Okay, we saw how close it was the first time. The first time, Aldo certainly showed that he's got very good speed. Reflexes are still there. He's got some good power, and he landed some very tough shots on Holloway. Holloway even admit, he got me clean. Won't say that he necessarily hurt me, but he got me clean with a couple shots. And, you know, with 4 ounces of gloves on in the sport of mixed martial arts, if a guy catches you clean, not necessarily hurts and staggers you, but if he could catch you clean, that could be the beginning of the end, given the fact that you followed it up with quick speed combinations. And with those 4 ounce gloves, the first one may not get you, the second one may not get you, but that third, fourth, fifth one comes in, you're certainly going to start feeling a lot more, a little bit wobbly than you did initially before. So Aldo certainly showed in their first matchup that he still has that ability to go out there against the top competition in the division and definitely hold his own. Holloway, though, being having a championship heart, he certainly showed that even when he's rocked, even when he gets stung and hurt and loses a round or two, you could make an argument that Holloway could have been down 2-0 against Aldo. He certainly lost the first round for sure. The second round, you can go either way with that. But he showed that, hey, you know what? It's not how you start. It's how you finish. And Holloway is one of these fighters that seems to get better as the fight goes on. He's one of these fighters that he may not get you right out the gate, but he is someone who has shown that as it goes on, he's going to find his rhythm. He's going to find his timing, his range. He's got very long arms. He's a very skilled, well-rounded fighter. He's got good head movement, good striking, and he likes to come forward and he likes to apply the pressure. And sometimes when doing that, if you're taking on someone who's a very good counterpuncher, someone who's very good at distance and range, and they certainly know how to use angles, it may take you a few extra minutes to get to find your footing in the matchup as opposed to somebody who just wants to stand and bang with you in the phone booth. So you could definitely attribute that as being one of the key factors into why Aldo was able to jump out to a lead over Holloway. But then Holloway was able to show, not only in the Aldo fight, but in really all of his fights outside, in all of his fights in the UFC, there's a reason this man's on an 11-fight win streak. There's a reason this guy's taking on the who's who of the division and has come out more often than not as the winner and in impressive fashion. He's got very good power, very good cardio, the heart of a champion, which can't be overstated enough, but he's also got that kind of warrior-like mentality of, if you're going to hurt me, you can't just hurt me and expect that, oh, I'm going to cower and I'm just going to fold up here and try to play defense and cover up. A lot of times when we watch fights, when a fighter gets rocked, they tend to back up towards the cage and kind of fold up, or if they're on the ground and ground and pound and they get hit, they kind of just fold up in the fetal position. Holloway isn't that type of fighter. He's the type to where if he gets rocked, yeah, sure, I may take a step back, but if I get rocked, my eyes are up, and even though I may not be at the front door, I may be more towards the back head and out while the lights are on, I'm certainly still capable of throwing a counter combination back at you, or at least a counter hook or an uppercut to say, hey, you're going to have to put me away. I'm not a guy that is just going to get rocked and hurt and then panic and get all flustered and scared that, oh my gosh, I got hurt. What's going to happen now? No, he's the type to say, hey, you want to finish me? You better come in and do it yourself. I'm not going to help you, to say the least. So for Max Holloway, this is certainly an opportunity for him to show that the first fight wasn't a fluke, that he is a legit champion, and that, hey, you know what? As great as Aldo is, not saying it's past all those prime, I mean, a time, but I got his number. I got his number. It's kind of like with Antonio Tarver and Roy Jones Jr., or Vernon Forrest and Sugar Shane Mosley, or Mosley and De La Hoya. There are just some fighters that have your number. Even though you can still go on and win titles and win big matchups and be a champion, there are just some fighters who have your number. Just some guys, whether it's the matchup, the styles, the skill set, age, whatever it is, there are some people who just have your number in this sport. And if Max Holloway can certainly go in there and win another impressive performance against a Brazilian, he'll certainly be able to show that, hey, I'm here to stay as champion. And if Aldo ever works his way back up to a title, we know how Chapter 3 is going to be, the same as the first two. For Aldo, this is a very, very crucial moment in his career, because earlier, before, a few years back, when he lost to McGregor, he was obsessed with getting a rematch with McGregor. But because it was a 13-second knockout, it kind of seemed like, well, you're going to have to win a few fights before that happens. And he does go out there and outclass Frankie Edgar, who is no easy feat whatsoever. But he outclassed him at UFC 200, and we're like, okay. Well, Aldo clearly is not gone. He's not over the hill just yet. He just got caught. It's 13 seconds. What can you really take away from 13 seconds other than, hey, you just got caught? So, okay. All right. Well, you know what? You know what? Okay. Maybe Aldo is still in his prime, is still very good, and still an elite talent. But let's see how he does against some of these young warriors, and first up being Max Holloway. And like I said, in the first two rounds, he showed, hey, I'm here, baby. I still got it. I can still rock him. But then we kind of saw Aldo slow down a little bit, and we saw Max pick up the pace. We saw Max land a little bit more often. And one thing that we saw that we never saw before is Aldo was taking punches from Holloway, and you were clearly seeing the effects take its toll. See, with McGregor knocking him out, anybody could get knocked out with a flash shot, or anybody could get caught very clean and flush, and they just go down. That happened. So Randy Couture has been knocked out a couple times by Chuck Liddell, and it wasn't necessarily that Randy didn't have it no more. He just pushed the right button at the right angle with the right amount of force. My lights went out. It happens, okay? And I believe that's what happened with obviously that's what happened with McGregor. But with Holloway, we saw that it was a culmination of so many punches starting to land, the pressure picking up. And that's something we haven't seen with Aldo. We see him in wars with Frankie Edgar, wars with Chad Mendes, going to battle with Ricardo Lamas and other fighters as well, where, yeah, he caught some shots, but they didn't really affect him. Like, they didn't really rock him. They didn't really make him say, oh, shit, what's going on here? But with Holloway, we saw that. And I wonder if that's going to be the case here, where Aldo's going to think, I got to do one of two things. I either have to keep pedal to the metal, and I have to try to get this guy out of there early, because I know he's got cardio and I know he's got power, to where if he starts tagging me, I don't know if I'll be able to keep standing with him, or if I'm going to have to start incorporating some of my Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and I'm going to see if I can get this fight to the ground. Not saying that Max Holloway is a slouch down there, but it will certainly take away some of the torque that he could get on his punches in the stand-up game. So that is going to be interesting to see what Aldo does. Now, from what Aldo is saying himself and in his camp, he's going back to his Muay Thai roots. He's going back to using Muay Thai, his boxing that he's been picking up, and he's looking to go out there and just put a beat down on Max Holloway. Now, one of the advantages where he can really catch Holloway is with his leg kicks. Like I said, Aldo has some of the most vicious leg kicks in the history of the sport. If he goes to the leg kicks, we've seen in other matchups previously of fighters, when you go to the legs early, you're taking away a guy's movement, you're taking away his cardio, but you're also taking away his power. We saw with Forrest Griffin and Rampage Jackson. We saw with Jose Aldo and Uriah Faber. We also saw with Rafael Dos Anjos and Nate Diaz when they fought. When you go to the legs of a guy who doesn't, you know, who isn't constantly moving around like a Frankie Edgar, who's just like a jackrabbit, you can't really get a beat on him. When you're trying to take on somebody who wants to stand and bang with you, taking out their legs, that's going to take a lot of power off of their punches. That's going to really limit their movement, making them more of a stationary target for you to pick apart. And then also with the cardio, it's not necessarily that it's the cardio, but the pain in the leg. Now you're having to put all your weight on the back leg. And now you're trying to have to move around with one good leg, and then you're taking shots. So, yeah, you are going to drain some of your cardio because now you're putting your body weight on just one leg, and now you're trying to move around with that, and it's just not as effective, obviously, as if you got both legs. So for Aldo, I personally would say if I'm in this corner, the game plan has to be right from the jump, you got to start going to his legs. Outside leg kicks, inside leg kicks, going up, you got to mix up your strikes. And that is something I believe with Aldo, he kind of got complacent with his striking as the years have gone on to where he knew he was so much faster, he knew he hit harder, and he knew his boxing was pretty much, outside of maybe Frankie Edgar, he knew that his boxing was on a different level than everyone else in the division. But then Conor McGregor comes along, and it's like, well, obviously I don't have the most power in the division, but wait, whoo, the Irishman went to lightweight. Got it. Now I got the speed. Now I got the power. Now I have the power in this division. And oh snap, this kid from Hawaii, what the hell, man? He's got power too. So Aldo is going to have to now figure out, I can't just use my hands. I got to use my legs as well. I got to throw leg kicks. I got to get the Muay Thai punch. I got to get some knees to the body. I got to throw some kicks to the body. So look for Aldo to have a more be more like a Swiss Army knife in this particular matchup. He's already prepared and studied Holloway before. Now it's just about fine-tuning and making some slight adjustments to his first game plan into this one. And I definitely think that we're going to see him use more tools than just his stand-up boxing. When they first fought, it was more of a boxing match than a mixed martial arts match, given these guys' skill set. I think in this one, we're going to see Aldo utilize more of his Muay Thai background as opposed to just wanting to stand and use his boxing. For Holloway, you do want to say, hey, why not do the same thing as before? Just because now you've seen his speed. Now you've tasted his power. And sometimes when you fight a guy for the first time and you get off to a slow start, it's because you're trying to find your range, you're trying to find your distance, and you're trying to get used to his rhythm. But then the second time you fight him, now because you're familiar with it, now you find it just a little bit sooner. Now you're able to engage just a little bit earlier because now you know what's up. Now you know what to expect. Okay, I know this guy's really fast, so now I know how that speed feels. I've tasted how his power. I know what that feels like, whether I can take it or not. But I can feel it. Or, hey, this guy doesn't hit hard. Outside of him landing that perfectly timed shot on the button, I could take his punches, no problem. It's no big deal. It's kind of like when Chuck Liddell fought Tito Ortiz. He knew he could take Tito Ortiz's punches just because Tito Chuck at that time had a good chin. So he knew, hey, Tito's not a guy who's got this knockout power. Now, if it was Vitor Belfort or Rampage Jackson, okay, this would be a little bit different. But because it's Tito, if he wants to stand and trade with me, no problem. Let's bang. I'm throwing caution to the wind because I know you're not going to be able to phase me like that. And with Holloway, I definitely believe the best thing for him to try to do, one, keep this fight, I would say, mix it up with your distance and close and engagement. What I mean by that is you want to stay on the outside because, like I said, you should anticipate that those leg kicks could be coming. So you want to try to keep it on the outside to where you're kind of doing a Holly Holm style of technique where you're on the outside, Holly Holm or Lyoto Machida for those of you who want to use that reference, to where you're on the outside kind of distant, kind of timing it, and then you jump in real quick with the strike. Bah-bah! And then you jump right back out. That way, you're out of the distance of all those kicks. Mixing it up from there would be when you jump in sometimes, stay inside a little bit. You are the bigger guy. You do have the longer arms. Utilize your size on Aldo. Get some inside dirty boxing. Make it a phone booth fight. Push him up against the fence. That's something we don't see a lot of fighters trying to do with Aldo. One, he is so damn good, and he is so tough to corner and up against the fence or to press and to keep things close. He's got fantastic footwork to move around. So there's trouble there. But because Aldo does want to get his title back, and he does want to prove that the first time was a fluke, and he is looking to get retribution, you can kind of maybe put it in the sense that to be the man, you got to beat the man. So Aldo's not going to be looking to counter and to stay away from you as much. So he's going to be looking to engage, and that's when you maybe use it against him, put him on his back a little bit. Let's see how his jiu-jitsu really is. Put him up against the cage. Wear on him a little bit. You utilize that. Utilize some wrestling techniques. Get him up against the cage. Go to combinations to the body and up top. Folks, this is going to be, I believe, a very, very good matchup between the two. Maybe happening a lot sooner than we anticipated, but Holloway, Aldo 2 is certainly going to be a matchup worth checking out. So the main event of UFC 218, it is going to deliver some fireworks indeed. Now, speaking of fireworks being delivered, this co-main event of the heavyweight clash for a potential number one contender, oh my God, you are taking on Alistair Overeem and Francis Ngannou, putting them in a cage and say, fight it out. Ooh-wee. Now, just for retrospective here, Overeem is one of the most accomplished, skilled, and feared strikers in heavyweight history. Now, he is 37 years old. But we have seen, one, in the sport of MMA, we've seen some guys go, you know, to their later years and still have success, i.e. check out guys such as Drew St. Pierre, who's 36, Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, Anderson Silva, although Anderson, you know, with his troubles that we'll get into a little bit later, you know. But we've seen guys go into their later years and still have success, especially if they work on their training, their diet, nutrition, take care of their bodies, and with the fight camp that they're in, and with Overeem being at Jackson Wink, you know he's getting some of the best coaching and training and sparring with partners there. So certainly do believe Overeem's got it in him to be one of the best still in this sport, even at his age. And he is one of the most experienced strikers. This guy is a former K1, kickboxing that is, K1 Grand Prix champion. For folks who aren't necessarily familiar with that, that is like winning an Olympic medal in your respective sport. You are one of the best. That is one of the, that is a who's who put into a tournament and saying, yeah, let's see who the best is. And Overeem won it. He's also got 59 total mixed martial art fights. And of those 59s, he's won 43 of them. 19 wins, both have come by knockout and submission. So he's versed in not putting you out cold or making you tap. Counter to that, he does have 15 losses. 10 of them are by knockout. In the world of kickboxing, he has 4 losses. 3 of them are by knockout. He also has 10 wins with 7 knockouts. So Overeem has shown when he fights, more often than not, I'm either knocking you out or making you tap, or you're going to knock me out. He's only went to decision 3 times in the sport of mixed martial arts. Oh, excuse me. 8 times in the sport of mixed martial arts. Now, he's won 5 of them, lost 3. But Overeem is one of the most feared strikers in mixed martial arts. He was that when he first came to the UFC, and he's been that ever since. He's got some of the most vicious body kicks you will ever see. As Brock Lesnar, that left kick to the body, oh my gosh. He has arguably the toughest, the scariest knees in the clinch in all of mixed martial arts. He has knocked out multiple fighters, including Mark Hunt, which is no easy feat given the head and chin that he's got on them, with knees in the clinch. He's a very good striker with his hands, as Junior Dos Santos. And he's got very good power. And he's a fighter who has, since being with Jackson Wink, has learned not to go in there and just overwhelm guys with his size, strength, skills, and just go all out and blow his load early. He's become a guy who now sits on the outside, takes his time, picks you apart. If he gets you up against the cage, he's going to hold you up against there a little bit, lean on you a little bit, make you carry his body weight, drain your cardio tank. And yes, we'll admit, some of his fights have not been as entertaining, but that's also because of the expectation of an Overeem fight. You're expecting him to go in there and just roughshod everybody and either knock him out or submit him. And yeah, sure, there are some fights where it wasn't as entertaining, i.e. the Frank Mir fight or his last one, a majority decision win over Fabricio Werdum at UFC 213. Yes, there are some fights that are letdowns. But more often than not, ask Kamaru Hunt, ask Andre Arlovski, Junior Dos Santos, Stefan Struve. More often than not, he is in there and he is putting a hurting on you. He is definitely not one to play with. Big problem with him, though, is he's kind of got that chin. And like I said, you look at his knockouts from mixed martial arts and kickboxing, that is a lot of wear and tear to have. 10-plus knockouts, over a dozen knockouts on your resume, that's not good at all, folks, just because of the wear and tear that that puts on your chin. You know how they say you only have so many rounds in you as a fighter. You can only take so many punches. And we've seen it with guys like Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture and others where these guys were able to take massive punishment in their careers. But then as they got older, that chin just went a little bit quicker. With every fight, now you, instead of taking five major shots, now you're down to taking four, then three, then two, and then the last one. So it is something to look at to say, man, if Overeem catches you, most likely, he's going to knock you out. But with that chin, if he gets caught, there is a chance that you could knock him out. And in the heavyweight division, we all know, one punch from any of these heavyweights can certainly change the tide. You know, in the different divisions, you might have some guys who are these big, massive power punches, right? But then there's some guys who you know, outside of that one clear shot that hits you right, that hits you square on the chin, shocks your nervous system, and you just go flatline. Outside of that, they don't necessarily have punching power to put you away. Michael Bisping was kind of looked at that in the middleweight division, even though he knocked out Luke Rockhold. You know, before that, he was kind of looked at as someone who doesn't have one-punch knockout power, but kind of he just overwhelms you with his punches. The Diaz brothers are like that, even though Nick has the knockout over Robbie Lawler, but they're not really known for being big punchers. George St. Pierre has got like that a big portion of his career as well, where it wasn't one or two big punches that knocked you out, but it was more so just a wave after tidal wave after tidal wave of so many strikes being landed. It just put you down. Overeem's that kind of a – in the heavyweight division, you don't have that. Every single fighter can knock you out with one punch. And that's what's so scary about all these heavyweight matchups. You don't know when it's going to come. You don't know when it's going to happen. Sure, a head kick can certainly put somebody out, but we've seen fighters take head kicks and still keep going, i.e. Diego Sanchez against BJ Penn. But in the heavyweight division, go ahead and take a head kick from one of these guys. See how you feel in the morning. Go ahead and let them land a clean shot or not. Sometimes not even a clean shot. Let them land a good shot on you, whether you fully block it, partially block it, slip it, roll with it, whatever, and it's night-night. Speaking of going night-night, in the heavyweight division, with punching power, Overeem, with all of his accomplishments in heavyweight division throughout his career, and the one thing missing is a UFC title, he has taken on one of, if not, and I'm not overstating this just for the sake of the show, the scariest hitters we have ever seen in this sport. Francis Ngannou, 31-year-old fighter from Cameroon. His nickname is the Predator. He's from Cameroon. He's Cameroonian and French. 6'5", 253, 84-inch reach. Hey, we just found somebody with the same reach as John Jones. That is scary. To think all the fighters we have ever talked about in any division, none of them have had the same reach as John Jones, Francis Ngannou does. And I've met Francis Ngannou in person. I've shaken his hand. Folks, people say this, and sometimes they're just saying it for the sake of saying it. I'm saying this to you because I've experienced it, and I will not lie to you. His hand literally felt like I was grabbing a large T-shirt smack dab in the middle, and then you fold the shirt over my hands. His hand is so huge, so huge. I would love to see what it looks like when he grabs a football or a basketball. I think there was a picture of him like with a baseball, and his fingers almost touched the bottom of his hand because his hands were so big. It is scary what this young man has. He's 10-1 in fighting, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions. So he's not going to decision. He's going in there to finish you off. And his only one loss came at his second fight in his career. So ever since then, he's gone on a 9-fight win streak. And it has been superb to watch. And ever since he joined the UFC back in 2015, he's accumulated already 5 victories. He's 5-0. All of them are stoppages. One KO, 3 TKOs, and 1 submission. And his last fight came earlier at the beginning of this year, the beginning of this year in January, on Fox, where he knocked out Andrei Arlovsky in under 2 minutes. This is one of the scariest guys out there because this is a guy who at one point, and has one of the greatest stories you'll ever hear. At one point in time, this guy was homeless, living on the streets, 6'5", 250, living on the streets. And he just walked into a gym in France. And he even admits, hey, I got into MMA just for fun. Like, I started training just for fun. Like, I wasn't having these dreams of being this world champion. My goal wasn't to say, okay, I'm moving to this super camp, and I'm just going to put everything I have into training, and I'm just going to isolate myself to be. No, it's like, hey, I just want to get in shape. I just want to have something to do, something to keep my mind off the day, something to keep me out the cold and the rain when it's that time of the year, given that I'm homeless. And shortly after that, the rest is history. Truly, truly an amazing story. And if you've watched him, if you watched his fights, you can see, one, physically how his body has just transformed. He's getting more ripped. He's looking more cut. He's quick as all hell from a guy his size. He's got extraordinary strength. He recently broke the record for the hardest punch in the world. If you guys remember Rocky IV, remember when Ivan Drago did a demonstration early on where he punched like this pad and all these, it calculated how much force he put between it? Now, as we saw the movie, we saw Drago had the Mexican supplements being put into his arm as well. But Nagano, being in the UFC, hey, he's been under there with USADA this whole entire time, and nothing has come up. So for all you guys that want to say, oh, it's roids, hey, if it is, he's got some stuff nobody else got, or at least very few got, because he's getting away with it. But he busted this the punching record for how much force you put into a punch. The previous record holder was Tyrone Sprong, and for my combat sports fans out there, you guys are very familiar with Tyrone Sprong, former multiple-time kickboxing champion. He's now a professional boxer, one of the hardest hitters. A fighter I still to this day do not understand why the UFC never gave him a shot in their promotion, given how good of a fighter he is, at least in the stand-up game. He would have been fun to watch. But he originally set it at like 11,000. I think it was 1,100 or 11,000. It might have been 1,100. But Nagano went in there and beat him by like 300-400 pounds. So let's just say, because again, I could be wrong. Let's just say if it was 1,100, Nagano went in there and beat him by like 1,440. If it was 11,000, then obviously, you know. But that's what Nagano had. 300 pounds. That's like watching Usain Bolt at the Olympics, where all these guys are world record holders. All these guys are some of the fastest men we've ever seen, and he is beating them by a mile. Where if you take a shot of him at the line, if you're not doing a wide angle or if you're not zoomed out close enough, I'm not talking about getting zoomed in on just him, but if you just take a normal picture, you're not seeing anybody else in that picture coming towards the finish line. And if you do, you're only seeing the tip of their nose, maybe a little bit of their face, you know, something like, or their hand, because their hand is going forward while they're running. That's how far in front Usain Bolt is, and that's how far in front Nagano is of the previous world record holder with his force and his punches. So as I said earlier, you take someone like Alistair Overeem, who does have a questionable chin, who has been knocked out over a dozen times. Can he withstand the punching power from Nagano? The biggest thing that's going to favor Overeem in this one is his experience and just how he goes about this matchup. Because it is a heavyweight bout and because these are two heavy hitters, is he going to go in there and maybe try to stay on the outside a little bit, kind of, you know, let the young man kind of try to figure out what he's going to do, throw some kicks from the outside, maybe time up against the fence, throw some knees in the clinch? Very possible. And if he does that, Overeem is going to find a lot of success. Nagano, obviously, he's going to want to come forward. He's going to want to engage early and often. And he's like, hey, look, I respect you as a striker, but you know what? I've been training with Glory Kickboxing Champion in my training camp, and I moved out here to Las Vegas 6 months ago. I've been training at the UFC Institute all year, getting ready for moments like this. I feel confident enough that wherever this fight goes, I'll be ready. Wherever we end up going in this, whether it's against the cage, circling, countering, meeting in the center, and just going all out bonkers, I'm confident that I'm going to walk away on top as a guy. I don't know who's going to do this one. And for either fighter gets a victory here, they are certainly putting their name right at the top of the heavyweight division for Stipe Miocic for the next title shot. Overeem, this will be his third win in a row since losing to Miocic last year, and he certainly wants to get back in there because he did have Miocic hurt. He got him in the guillotine. He had him hurt. So he certainly wants to go in there and prove that, hey, I can do this. Hopefully he doesn't do that that runaway that he did where he basically just turned his back and ran to the cage and then ran a circle basically all the way around the cage running away from Miocic. I don't like that look. Smart strategy, just don't like the look. That's all. The optics of it just don't sit well. Ngannou wins. Ngannou's certainly going to say, hey, I'm fresh blood. I got a great story. And who else do I need to beat? Because I beat a former UFC champion and a future Hall of Famer in Arlovski earlier this year. I beat one of the greatest strikers in mixed martial arts history and one of the most accomplished fighters in mixed martial arts history. And also Overeem. What's next? Let's go. Miocic, Ngannou. Let's go. Miocic Overeem, too. We'll see. 2018 is going to be interesting in the heavyweight division. Henry Cejudo versus Sergio Pettis in a flyweight match. Again, this is number one contender's prize right here. Cejudo, somebody who's looking to get back in the ring with the champion Demetrius Johnson. And when they fought before, everyone figured, hey, this is an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling. You know, he's one of the best around. You know, he's 10-0. With his wrestling and whatnot, he's going to be the biggest threat to Demetrius Johnson, at least on paper, going forward. Demetrius ran through him in less than 3 minutes. Knees to the body, then punches just finished him off. And I just think, honestly, just like we saw with Sarah McMahon and Ronda Rousey when she threw knees to her body, I think it was just something that wasn't expected. You know, like when you try to prepare for a match, sometimes you may overlook something and you just don't think that, oh, yeah, this is going to happen or this could pop up. And I just think knees to the body in the clinch was not something that Cejudo was prepared for. So when he took them, it was like, ugh. And it could just be that he's soft in the midsection, not soft that he doesn't have abs. But we look at a fight like Donald Cerrone. One of his biggest problems is when you go to the body on him. It's just one of those things. You know, Overeem with his chin is just one of those things. But Cejudo, you know, coming off a victory over Wilson Reyes earlier this year, certainly looking to say, hey, you know what? This is a fight between me and Pettis that was supposed to happen before, but due to an injury, I had to pull out. Now that we are going to settle it, one, let me just settle this little chapter right here because there's been some chirping going back and forth. But then also, if this will be my second fight, second win in a row, hey, I fought the champion already. Wasn't successful, but given my accolades and my accomplishments, let's go again. Especially given that Demetrius Johnson has cleared out the division almost twice over, let's run it back one more time. Sergio Pettis, the younger brother of former lightweight champion Anthony Pettis, certainly looking to get his first crack at a title and really to step out from under the shadow of Big Brother. He's only 24 years old, so he's got a long way to go in his career, but he is certainly someone who wants to show that at 16-2, okay, with three knockouts, three finishes, and on a four-fight win streak, hey, I understand that, yes, my big brother is who he is. He accomplished what he accomplished. First MMA fighter on the Wheaties box, former champion, got it. But you know what? Little brother got something to say, too, and say, hey, I want to make a mark in my own division and do my thing and show people that not only am I the younger brother of Anthony Pettis, but championship winning runs in the family. Now, although Anthony hasn't had that same success recently, he did have it at one point in time. Pettis is someone who has shown that he's got the cardio to go the distance. Of his 16 wins, 10 have gone to decision. But he is someone who, one, is not going to gas. Very, very well-rounded in the sense that his striking is legit. Maybe not world-class, given that he's trained at Duke Rufus's gym. Duke Rufus is a former world champion in kickboxing. He's certainly getting good training there. He may not be a world-class striker, but he is someone who can put together a nice combination. He's starting to sit down on his punches a lot more to where he's starting to generate more power. And his ground game is also something to look at with the jiu-jitsu that he gets there. But then also with the wrestling, when you got guys like Ben Askren, Tyrone Willie who train there as well, you're going to – that knowledge and that experience is just going to rub off on you in training and in practice. So this is going to be a very interesting matchup right here. I definitely think Pettis has a – I would like to see Pettis win simply for the fact that it's somebody new this time – challenge for the title, but Henry Cejudo is no easy feat, and if he wins, I certainly would not be mad at it at all, because I definitely feel Cejudo, I think he has kind of like that tough mentality of when he fights Pettis, he may try to employ the same game plan that fighters have tried to employ against Anthony Pettis. Let's make this a dirty fight. I'm not going to give him space. I'm not going to allow him the freedom to just stay at a distance, find his range and pick his shots. I'm going to get in close. I'm going to put my face in his chest. I'm going to put him down on the ground. I'm going to throw some punches on him. I'm going to throw some elbows against him. I'm going to push him up against the cage. I'm going to make sure that his back is riddled with cage marks all over his back, just because that's how much I'm going to have on there. And then every chance I get, I'm going to pick him up and I'm going to slam him down and I'm going to apply ground and pound. If you can do that, Cejudo's going to find himself to get an easy victory. But if he does that, he's also got to make sure that he doesn't overextend himself and allow Pettis to lock on a submission, i.e. an armbar, a triangle, a Kimura, etc., etc. So this is going to be an interesting matchup. Certainly looking forward to seeing the flyweights go at it. In the lightweight division, as I said, we got Eddie Alvarez, the former champion, taking on Justin Gaethje, the World Series, the fighting champion. Gaethje, 17-0, 15 knockouts. This guy, look, let me talk about Eddie Alvarez real quick. Alvarez, we know. King of the underground, one of the best well-rounded fighters. He can take you down to the ground. He can also stand with you and bang. This is a guy who has been through wars, and he has shown, whether it's against Dustin Poirier, whether it's against Rafael Dos Anjos, whether it's against Anthony Pettis, or whether it's against Cowboy Cerrone, even though it's a losing effort, he is game to go out there and fight you toe-to-toe. Gilbert Melendez, he is out there saying, hey, let's go. I'm from Philly. I trained in New Jersey. That's right. I'm training from two places that just got nothing but warrior's heart and nothing but fighting spirit. And I'm looking to bring it out here and show people that when I lost to Conor McGregor at Madison Square Garden, it wasn't because it was McGregor, although it was because the moment, and I just got caught up in everything and I just wasn't myself. But once I work my way back up there, I'm going to show you, as in the words of Eddie Alvarez, there ain't no Santa Claus. So Santa, you know, those guys from Philadelphia, Santa Claus. So Alvarez certainly wants to show that what happened at UFC 205 last year was a fluke, and that, hey, I'm still one of the elite names in this division. Do not overlook me and do not pass me over for other fighters as well, especially someone who's only one fight into his UFC career. Regardless of how exciting of a fighter he is, I'm certainly someone that you would not mark down as, oh, yeah, this is a stepping stone for me to the next level. I'm nobody's doormat. I'm nobody's gatekeeper. I'm here to show you that I am one of the elite in this division. He's going to have to do that against somebody who literally is like the Terminator. In a Terminator in the sense that he's going to keep coming and coming and coming forward. Gaethje has his style. And I don't know if it's just something he always developed, maybe as a kid, or just figured this is the best way for him to be effective with his skill set in fighting guys. To say, I'm going to tuck my chin down, put my hands up, and I'm going to walk towards you. I'm going to throw very hard, very vicious leg kicks at you. And I'm going to throw nothing but hooks, uppercuts, overhands, crosses. Like, I'm literally going to look to knock you out with every punch I throw. Leg kicks and punches. And you know what that's going to open up? That's going to open up for you to land a lot of shots on me. And that's cool. That's cool. Gaethje even said when he came to the UFC, he knows he's going to get knocked out eventually. It's just a matter of when. It's not if, when. When someone's going to knock me out. Hasn't happened yet. When he fought Michael Johnson earlier this year, it looked like Johnson was close to it on several different occasions where he rocked him, and it was like, uh-oh, see, we told you, different levels to this. But sure enough, Gaethje showed that, hey, there's a reason I'm undefeated. There's a reason I fight like this. I'm used to it. And me and Leo have talked about on this show before, there is something about a fighter who continuously puts pressure on you that just sucks your mental and your physical energy right out of you. Because mentally you're thinking, what the hell else do I got to hit this guy with where he keeps coming at me? What the hell? There's nothing I can do. Then physically, because you're worrying about moving out of the way, you're taking shots from him, you're trying to unload heavy shots on him, you hit him one hard time, doesn't work. The next time you're trying to hit him even harder, still doesn't work. And then he's hitting you hard. He's throwing leg kicks at you. So now you're trying to move around, but one leg is, oh, you're kind of dragging it along. And it just wears on you. And then his own punching power. So Justin Gaethje and Eddie Alvarez, this can flat out be fight of the night, potentially fight of the year. These guys, you know, Alvarez most likely, I would think, is going to imply more of a wrestling strategy in this one as opposed to anything else. Look for him to maybe do the same thing to Gaethje that he did to Anthony Pettis when they fought. Grab him up, double leg him, single leg him, get him on the ground, keep him up against the cage. Don't allow him the space to throw those leg kicks, to throw those punches. And then utilize, and then when I do that, step out, and then you know what? Fake going down, come up top with an overhand, come up top with a cross, come up top and mix it up. But definitely imply more of a wrestling style, whereas Michael Johnson really tried to stand with Gaethje. That's what Gaethje wants you to do. Now, Gaethje does have a wrestling background, so it's not like you could just take him down easily. But given his fighting style, it is one that leaves him open for takedowns easier than someone with a traditional, I'm a stand up, and I'm going to try to keep a distance, and I'm going to figure out where my opening is. Gaethje's like, I'm not standing up. Oh, I'm standing up. I'm not standing here. I'm coming forward. Again and again and again and again. That is it. Reset, come forward again. Reset, come forward again. He's like a damn robot, like the Energizer Bunny. It's kind of, no matter which way you turn him, he's going to keep coming forward. And that's why I think Alvarez has a chance of really getting some good takedowns in there, just because him coming forward all the time doesn't allow Gaethje to set his body and his legs up correctly to defend the takedowns as quickly as you would in a normal fighting stance. So this is going to be an all-out war, folks. Alvarez Gaethje is going to be one to watch indeed. Now, real quickly, I'll run through the rest of the card real quick here. No disrespect to the other fighters, but Tisha Torres, Marcelle Waterson, this is going to be a fun matchup to watch right here. As we all know, the ladies bring it. So please do not blink. This is going to be a good one. The karate hottie looking to get back out there, get some W's under her belt, and go on a nice win here. She's been a bit inconsistent in the UFC. She did suffer an injury in her early run, so she is looking to get back on in the winner's circle and show that, hey, she could be next to possibly challenge for a title in 2018, and she could pick up a win here. And Tisha Torres, talk about somebody who's been dealing with injuries. She is someone who as well has dealt with some injuries herself, but she's trying to get back in the consistent win corner and show that, hey, just like her wife, Raquel Pennington, who was about to sign a championship bout with Amanda Nunes before she suffered an injury, she too is looking to prove that she can earn her way to a title position in the women's strawweight division if she could just stay healthy and be consistent. So look for these two ladies to really come out there and bring it and bring the fire in a matchup against each other. In the main event on a prelims card, Charles Oliveira taking on Paul Felder. Oh my God. First off, is Oliveira going to make weight? That's been a big issue for him. He's like the Johnny Hendricks of the division, but he's that lightweight, not featherweight, so he should be good. We shall see. But he has shown if he gets you on the ground and he's able to utilize his jiu-jitsu, he can submit virtually anyone. So if he can just maintain that, that is going to be very interesting to see. And Paul Felder, very well-rounded fighter, very good hands and power. He keeps this fight standing. He's got the clear advantage here. That's going to be a good fight as well. We also got Alex Oliveira, no relation, taking on Yancy Medeiros. The cowboy taking on the Hawaiian from the islands as well. This is Max Holloway's training partner. This is going to be another good fight. I like the matchup just because styles make fights, and both of these guys like to stand and bang, and they like to come and like to bring the action to one another. Neither one is really known to just kind of lay and pray if they get you on the ground, or to just stand and keep the distance and not engage so much. Both of these guys like to engage. They're very good stand up. This should be a very fun matchup to watch as well. We also got Another women's strawweight bout, Felice Herring taking on Courtney Casey. Felice Herring, she's got a tremendous personality. If you guys follow her on social media, she does cosplay. She very much likes to engage with people. She does like to show off her tremendous figure. And she is someone who, look, she's trying to earn her way as well. She's trying to show the UFC and fans that once she starts picking up some W's here, that she is someone to get behind. She is someone to cheer for, and she's just having fun with it. That is one thing that you got to appreciate as well. And Courtney Casey, she's a tough, tough cookie. She is looking to show that, hey, I'm here in the UFC, and I'm looking to earn my turn in the division just like everyone else. And now that Joanna Young Jacek is not the champion anymore, at least for right now, that top spot is open. Look for this new tidal wave of contenders to start coming right outside the top five. Look for the rest of us to start making our way to the top of the ladder as well and show that, hey, we are here to fight. So there's a couple other good fights there, obviously, on a prelim card. If you guys check that out, it's going to be some good matchups there. UFC 218 in Detroit, it is going to be fun to watch. It is going to be a tremendous, and I do mean tremendous, fight card in itself. Now, real quickly, I want to talk about a fight that was just announced before I came on the air. We are going to have UFC 222 in Boston, Massachusetts. We're going to have Daniel Cormier defend his UFC light heavyweight championship against Volkan Ozdemir. Now, for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar with Ozdemir, he doesn't right now have the biggest name in the sport, but he is somebody to look forward to as far as saying, hey, excuse me, he is somebody to look forward to say, this is a guy that you have to look out for. His nickname, and I'm trying to pull it up right now, his nickname, I believe, is the watch or the timer. When he knocks guys out, one, they go to sleep. But two, when he's beating up on guys, he points to his wrist afterwards to say, hold on, I'm pulling it up right here. No time. That's right. Excuse me. No time. Now, this is a fighter who's 28 years old from Switzerland, 6'2". He has competed at heavyweight before, but he's been in the light heavyweight division. And this is a guy who is 5-0 in kickboxing, 15-1 in mixed martial arts with 11 knockouts. Now, most notably most recently, he knocked out Jimmy Manawa in July of this year in less than a minute. In fact, his last two fights have gone less than a minute, with victories over Misha Shokunov in less than a minute and Jimmy Manawa in less than a minute. He also has a victory over Ovin Singh Preux as well in the UFC. So since coming over to the promotion this year, at the start of this year, he's 3-0, two knockouts. He's going to get a shot at Daniel Cormier, who we know, hey, this is one of the best fighters the sport has ever seen. Unfortunately, due to what's happened with John Jones, one, his two losses to him, and then two, the controversy after those losses of John Jones. You know, it's kind of like a sour taste, but then a redemption story for Daniel Cormier. And to respect the fact that, one, he showed his emotion in the cage, but then two, when Jones pops out for trouble, it's like, again? Come on. So DC stepping back into the cage. Now, this was a fight that was originally going to be made, but then Ozdemir got in trouble, got into a fight back home in Switzerland, and then he went to court and was like, wait, it's up in the air. We don't know what's going to happen, but the UFC is confident that they are going to have him available come January. So he is going to get the crack at UFC light heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier in Boston. That is going to be a very good matchup. And Ozdemir has kind of called out DC to say, hey, look, don't just come in here looking to wrestle me. I'm going to knock you out in the first round. And DC has gone in and say, hey, you think so, huh? Okay, not going to happen. I turned to Luke Rockhold, Cain Velasquez, and I'm pretty damn tough myself. Let's see how it goes. Now, this wouldn't be the first time that DC has fought such a high accomplished striker. He's also got two victories over Anthony Johnson. Now, even though they were both by submission, both fights, really, DC looked like he wanted to stand up, at least initially, before in the first fight, Johnson knocked him almost across the cage. And then the second fight, for some reason, Johnson was trying to engage the wrestling. DC has shown, even against John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, and two times against Rumble Johnson, regardless of the striking pedigree or the power difference, he's willing to stand in there and trade with guys. So this could be a very fun and exciting matchup to kick off the year. Definitely looking forward to that. Now, some other news that's going on. Dana White was doing a phone, not a phone. He was doing like a media interview this week, the other day, and he says, one, he's not sure if Conor McGregor will ever fight in the UFC again. Conor McGregor has $100 million in the bank from his fight with Floyd Mayweather. Kind of like what the former middleweight champion Marvin Hagler said, it's tough to get out of, it's tough to go in there and get ready for a fight when you're waking up in silk sheets every day. And that's the thing with McGregor. With that money, and we know what type of lifestyle he loves to live, it's very hard to see him getting ready to, one, not come back for a payday that's going to be close, not even half of what he made against Mayweather. But then also, hey, why don't I want to get trained to get punched in the face again when I got this much money? But given what happened with him over in Ireland when he got into an apparent bar fight with some alleged Irish mafia members, he might be looking to kind of hide a little bit more than being the center of a cage where he's out in the open where it's just him, his opponent, the referee. He may want to stay away for a little bit. We'll see how that all works out. Dana White also said that he Ronda Rousey hasn't officially retired yet, and he's talked to her, and, you know, there's no idea that she'll want to come back yet. Dana White is not in favor of her coming back. She's obviously got some things going on. There's an alleged she's getting ready for a WrestleMania show next year for the WWE with her former teammate Shayna Baszler being with the promotion. So there is that going on. Potential movie deals going on. Even though she lost and some of those things fell through, she can still hop back onto that, especially with her WrestleMania spot. That can definitely put her back in the good side with Hollywood as well. We'll see how it all goes. If she comes back, there's only one fight to make, folks, and you know what that is. And we do know Ronda Rousey and the UFC does not want Cyborg standing across from Ronda Rousey. Although Chris Cyborg is going to have her hands full at the end of this year against at UFC 219 against Holly Holm, the woman who first defeated Ronda Rousey. That is going to be a good matchup indeed. Dana White also said that he will be pissed if George St. Pierre does not defend the middleweight championship. It is in George St. Pierre's contract that if he was to win, he'd have to defend it. And hey, that dude, that's kind of like what, you know, we agreed upon when you come back. Now, if George St. Pierre may want to say, I'll vacate the title and I'll move back down to welterweight and I'll fight somebody else, okay, but it is going to be interesting to see what happens in the middleweight division. Outside of one or two other opponents, there's really no one in the middleweight division I think will be a smart matchup for George St. Pierre. Bisping, no disrespect to him, he kind of was the ideal matchup for him, even though he was the bigger guy, but given the guys like Luke Rockhold, Kevin Gastelum, Yoel Romero, not really a lot of other options there in the middleweight division, but you do have the interim champion Robert Whittaker waiting for a shot at him. You also got a young guy by the name of Kelvin Gastelum, who, oh my gosh, is looking amazing. He's always out there. Too bad Anderson Silva popped out for a second time by USADA. That would have been an interesting matchup to finally see those two legends step in the cage. Speaking of Kelvin Gastelum, this past Saturday over in Shanghai, Gastelum knocked out Michael Bisping, who stepped in for Anderson Silva, as I said, popped out by USADA, flagged by USADA for doping. So Bisping steps in on 3 weeks' notice after losing and possibly suffering a concussion against George St. Pierre earlier this month to fight Kelvin Gastelum, and he got knocked out in the first round. And I get what everyone in the world of mixed martial arts is kind of angry at the UFC about, that Bisping jumped in so quickly after having a concussion. But I also say this. One, you know, if he would have beat Kelvin Gastelum, would anyone have been complaining? No, you wouldn't have. I do understand fighter safety, and you don't want to see Bisping suffer another gruesome injury like he does with his eye. You don't want to see something like that happen, especially on such short notice. Guys like Cerrone like to fight very often and a few other fighters, but kudos to Bisping for being willing to step in there. He did say afterwards, though, he does want to have his retirement match in England come next year. So who's his final match going to be? I personally still want to see Bisping versus Yoel Romero, but we'll see how it all turns out in that regard. Again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Inside the Octagon. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for a new episode of Inside the Octagon. Next week, we'll have my boy Leo Shower back here. Oh, and shout out to Kristen Graham for winning, going up to Canada this past week, last week, and she won the interim world champion let me pull this up real quick before the show goes. Hold on, guys. Bear with me here. There it goes. Christian Graham wins an Inter Armour athlete, interim world champion in a lightweight division of the Super League. She went to Canada and represented. So as she was on this show before, big shout out to her. Again, guys, thank you guys for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KLUA11, KLUA11. Also, follow All Things Sports on Facebook. That's the sports page, All Things Sports. Till next week, everybody, take care. Peace.
Track. Girls that used to turn they back, causing me to yank they arm and push like I would do them all. Now I'm saying thank you cause they tell me my shit's a bomb explosive. But my niggas drinking cognac, smoking weed, always fat. More than one firearm, chrome rims, rhino. Chronic in your system, let me know. My shit's a bomb explosive.
West Coast shit, nigga. Overdosage, imperial pistols, ferocious. Fuck a bitch, don't.